It's Celtics coverage on CLNSRadio.com.
Sensational move from Kyrie Irving. Oh,
that's what I'm talking about.
Horford lays it up and in.
Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll free 347-215-7771.
Woo! That was a good one, wasn't it? We needed that. I think everyone in Celtics Nation needed a game like that. Celtics win by the grit of their teeth tonight, 100-99 over the Oklahoma City Thunder in TD Garden, or the TD Garden Center, as they were calling it tonight. You all saw the last play. If you didn't, Jason Tatum driving to the lane, down two. They only needed two to tie it, coming out of a Brad Stevens timeout with 7 seconds left. He gets to the teeth of the defense, draws a few defenders in close, and whips it right out to Marcus Morris, who does a little sidestep. Sometimes that can throw you off, as we know here in Syracuse after some of the March Madness games we've seen. But Morris was calm, regained his balance, and drilled it for the win. Only 1 second left on the clock. Celtics went ahead 100-99, and that is where it stayed tonight. Looks like I clocked a bit off here on the stream on Blog Talk Radio for some reason. We're not going to be able to fix that tonight, but we will be on the air. We're going to go off the air in 5 minutes, it looks like, but we are going to be on the air until 11:30 tonight. So if you're listening live right now, 347-215-7771, the call lines are going to be open all the way till 11:30. So even though we're not live on the air, you can listen to us by calling in there or by just calling in and talking to us. So 347-215-7771 before it's too late. Celtics win 100-99. I'm Bobby Manning, and with me today is Andrew Rubino.
Bob, let's do this thing. I'm excited to talk. That's a huge one. They just stole that. The Thunder 6-game winning streak, they had that. Melo 2 missed free throws from a Cuse guy, no less. We'll talk about that.
Melo was pretty big down the stretch, and you're going to pull two exciting things out of this game, I think. Thunder were on the verge of 7 straight, so if you want to see a dangerous team out in the West who look pretty good again tonight, they are your rooting interest out there for a change up in the West. It's them. It's the Rockets. A little bit of a different taste out in the West playoffs this year. Celtics, who knows what we're going to get out of them come playoff time. Kyrie Irving's down, as we know. Today we heard that he is not going to travel with the team on this upcoming road trip while they play March Madness in Boston. So earliest time you're going to see him is March 31st. Marcus Smart, I hear some people saying he'll be back in the second round. He tore a tendon in his right hand, as you know, while we were gone, or while I was gone. I haven't been on this program in a few weeks, so welcome back to me. Everyone's gone. Marcus Smart, Daniel Tice out for the season. Gordon Hayward, we already knew that, but it's pretty much confirmed at this point that he's not coming back. And then you got Jaylen Brown, who looked like he nearly died on a fallout in Minnesota. So he'll be back on the road trip. But for now, this team is just the walking wounded. But the people who are still alive, and Jason Tatum, even though he got smashed in an uncomfortable area tonight, is still walking, still rolling, and playing great basketball for the Celtics. He was the key tonight. I think one thing you're learning out of this stretch right now is that Tatum can create for himself, can be comfortable as that leading scorer, and we're seeing a Celtics team that's pretty self-sufficient right now. We're seeing guys go down in the key creation roles. We're seeing Al Horford struggle immensely right now, and we're going to get to him as we have on this program for quite a few games now. This team just keeps on rolling. Terry Rozier, creating offense. 20 straight games now with double figures for Terry Rozier. And while people have been coming in and out of the lineup, the team's been hit with inconsistency at that point guard spot, just in terms of bodies being there. He's been a constant presence for them, scoring out of the point guard spot for nearly a fourth of the season, if I'm doing math correctly. So he has been vital. Greg Monroe getting after it. He was very good tonight, and as the Celtics almost faded out of it in the late going here, he just kept scoring back and forth with Carmelo Anthony, taking it right to him in the hole. Thunder thought they could get away with putting Melo in that big man defense role, and it worked for most of the night. But once they switched Monroe in down the stretch, he was scoring at will on Carmelo Anthony, and that was a vital factor down the stretch, too. So those are my three keys right there. Terry Rozier, even though he didn't have the game winner, set up the game winner with a three. And Jason Tatum, even though he didn't have the game winner, set it up with a nice drive, and Marcus Morris just happened to cap it off. Everybody making a little bit of a contribution today in a win that the Celtics stole 100-99. So Andrew Rubino is going to give us his cold open to start this off.
Well, Bob, I feel like this is the type of game that just shows how valuable Brad Stevens is, right? Because now they're 2-2 since the absolute debacle against the Pacers, where both Smart and Tice get hurt, and Kyrie obviously goes down with his injury as well. So it's one of those things that since then they played a really hard-fought game against the Wizards that they genuinely should have won, but that's fine. That's a one-point loss to a pretty legit team that's been missing John Wall for a while. And then they had a good win over the Magic with great bench play, including 10 from Larkin, 17 from Monroe. And then that loss to the Pelicans was bad, but tonight coming back, playing this Thunder team that is so hot and really stealing it from them, I think that shows that Brad Stevens, no matter what, can always make lemonade with whatever lemons you give him. And the thing that's so impressive to me is that it's different guys every night. I mean, Tatum's obviously been the constant and has been his go-to, and he has been all year because he's started every game this year so far, but it's one of those things that when you have guys like Larkin coming off the bench and playing 25 important minutes, and Brad Stevens finds an efficient way to have Greg Monroe only play 22 minutes, yet he gets him in there in those important moments, like you said at the end when he had those two big buckets, it shows how valuable, in a game like this, it shows how valuable it is to have one of the best coaches, if not the best coach in the league, and Brad Stevens.
CLNS Celtics post-game show. We're about to go off the air, but like I said, 347-215-7771. You can join us, and we do want you to join us here. I see a couple callers lined up already, including our own Nick Sacento. Tonight's show is brought to you by Hims, which wants you to know that 66% of men lose their hair by 35. That's scary. Scary stuff right there. Me and Bino thrive on our good-looking hair, and luckily we're not that close to 35, but if you're approaching there, you can start to notice hair loss, but by that point it's too late. What you want to do is catch your hair before it goes away, and Hims is going to be the one to help you do that. It's nothing funky. It's not a snake oil or gas station supplement. It's not anything that's going to freak you out. It is just a well-known generic equivalent to the brand name subscriptions that help you keep your hair. There's no waiting room, no awkward visit with a doctor. You don't even have to tell anyone. I mean, my hair could be going right now and you wouldn't even know it because I'd just be using Hims. It's that discreet. But anyway, you can order now. Try out Hims. Just give it a try if you're going through some hair loss right now, or you just want to catch it before it starts, which is the key. My listeners are going to get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last. See the website for full details. And this could cost hundreds of dollars, Bino, if you went to the doctor. If you went over across the street there to the health center and try to get some hair loss product, they're going to throw it on your bursar account and just kill it. Bino knows what that means. Anyway, $5, try out Hims, hims.com, forhims.com. There's a four before the Hims. Forhims.com/report. That's forhims.com/report. Forhims.com/report. And that is going to take us right into the show. The first topic I want to talk about tonight is Greg Monroe, who is, I want to say, 10 games into his Celtics tenure at this point, probably give or take that many. And there's been so much debate about him so far. The porous defense, not too good, a little slow on his feet on that end. The touch around the rim, I've been impressed by how he can use both hands at this point to finish around the basket. And we've seen him go to the left side comfortably, which does seem to throw guys off. That's been interesting to me, is that defenders are still really weary of going at left-handers for some reason. It's like they're just not used to it. So he has been finishing fairly comfortably inside when he's not just tossing the ball up and catching it. I'm sure that's taken a few points off his percentages at this point. But rebounding's been strong, although Steven Adams did beat him on a key play down the stretch tonight to get offensive rebounding position. It almost blew this game for the Celtics, but he missed a free throw, which ended up being key when Monroe fouled him. But overall, a great game tonight from Monroe. once again, he was good in the Pelicans game. He was creating for others, passing from the low post, rebounding strong. And then tonight he follows it up with an effort where he puts out 17 points, 6 rebounds, and 3 assists. Keeps his turnovers below his assists. Didn't foul all that often. I think you're seeing Monroe, despite his limitations, just buy in so hard to this team, the system, the minutes he's getting. You knew he really wanted to be here when he got here, knowing that he was going to be coming off the bench. But even though he doesn't fit in the system perfectly, he's just going for it. Every minute he's out there, he's been going hard the last few games. He's starting to look comfortable. And even though I wasn't the biggest Monroe fanatic coming in, I definitely like Daniel Theis over him. I'm comfortable with him being that backup center going forward, maybe even the starting center, depending on who they play round one.
I would say with Monroe, the thing that's so impressive to me, like I said at the very beginning, is the efficiency in which he does it. He's not playing 30-plus minutes a night. You know, so it's one of those things that when he can go in there, he can give you very quality production in the type of minutes that he's getting. That's what's really impressive to me. And also, too, we talked about this on other shows, is how, Bobby, we were actually concerned about how much depth this all these centers and the bigs on the Celtics really had. And all of a sudden, we literally jinxed it. Theis goes down a few, like literally a week later after we had talked about that. And now it's perfect to have Monroe. The reason they went out and got a guy like Monroe is having depth. And Monroe's perfectly increased his minutes just a bit. And he's obviously, Bobby, he's 14 games into that Celtics tenure. He's averaging 9.5 with 5.5 boards and shooting a very quality 58% from the field. So you have to love what Monroe is doing in such a short tenure here in Boston.
Danny Ainge can foresee a lot of things. Maybe he looked ahead and told Greg Monroe when he was in the meeting that someone was going to go down and he was going to be filling a huge space going forward. I mean, how many times did we complain about how many wings there were on this team? Then Gordon Hayward goes down. Then all of a sudden there's too many guards. That's been a topic of discussion for years. Now it looks pretty good that Terry Rozier's in here after both point guards go down. And then 3 centers. One of them goes down and they still have another able guy, able body sitting in there. It's not often you lose 2 point guards and you have a player of the caliber of Terry Rozier who has been scoring 16 points per game over the last 20 games. That's your third option at point guard right there. That's pretty damn good. Greg Monroe, a former lottery pick, being your third option at center, not too bad. So this team padded itself with depth. You got a 20-year-old scoring 23 points who is the second option behind a perennial all-star who is supposed to be the centerpiece of this team. Not bad. That's why you build depth. That's why you bring in extra bodies, even though it doesn't look like you need them. It's why you keep guys in the G League, Gershon Yabusele, even though it doesn't look like you need him one night. Celtics are learning that that's going to be the way to keep carrying success, even as all these bodies go down.
And he started, too. Gershon started a game.
On the night when they had nobody.
Yeah, that was the Wizards night. I mean, he did enough, but it was one of those things that I think the trend overall is no matter win or loss and through these 4 games where they've gone 2-2, Tatum's just been that constant. And he doesn't look like a 20-year-old. He looks like a guy that's been in this league for multiple years and is ready to fully bud. I mean, I feel like that the steps that Tatum has taken this year as a 19 and then now 20-year-old rookie with his birthday earlier this month, those are the types of steps that you see over the course of a couple of years. I mean, Julius Randle in the Lakers was a lottery pick, number 7 overall. And you see Randle finally putting it together in his 4th year, right before he goes into free agency. Tatum looks way beyond that, and he's in his rookie year, Bob, and he's 19, 20 years old. So I think it's so impressive how Tatum has really picked up the slack. And that gets to another point I want to talk about, which is the lack of play tonight from Al Horford in a game when obviously the Celtics needed Al Horford to step up, considering that the depth is not great right now, considering the amount of injuries and the scoring isn't at a premium with Kyrie and Jaylen Brown out. And, Bobby, you get 5 points from Al Horford tonight. You get 5 points from your guy that you're paying, what, everybody says $27 million this year?
Yeah. And I think that 5 points was downgraded from 6 points. They must have overturned a 3 because he hit 2 threes early in the third quarter, I want to say. It took him all the way until the third quarter with 11 minutes left to get his first points in this game. And he plays 33 minutes, turns the ball over 4 times. There was a brutal stretch to end the second quarter, where the Celtics turned it over four times. Turnovers were flying back and forth, and Westbrook by no means had a clean, efficient night. He was throwing the ball around too. So it all balanced out in the end, but Horford, I'm the biggest Horford defender going, and there's really just no way to defend the stretch he's on right now. Bodies are going down left and right. It's making me sad to say this. We're seeing Horford deteriorate right now on the offensive end, and he's still a phenomenal defender. Tonight, I think the Celtics had a very strong defensive effort just because he was in there. They were crashing the middle a lot. Holding Westbrook to 5 of 12 shooting to start this game was really impressive. But offensively, he's giving them nothing right now. And into the third quarter, fourth quarter, they're feeding him shots, good open looks, and he's still missing them. The touch is gone.
Bob, do you think the amount of guards and the different amount of lineups he's played with because of the different injuries is a factor in the little bit of a, not little bit, I know, a serious decline in these past 10 or 15 games? Because to me, I feel like it would be stressful as the guy who's always playing defense and is still a facilitator on offense to play with this many different combinations of guards, especially guys that are young. Look, there's tons of validity to what you're saying, and I'm not saying that he doesn't look pretty dull at times, but I don't want to jump too quick and say he's deteriorating fully and that we're never going to see him peak up again. I feel like that he's been playing so well at times with Kyrie this year that I don't know if it's just because of the way that he's been forced to play with so many different combinations of guards, but whatever it is, he clearly has lacked in these last, call it, seven games or so. He's had double digits multiple times, so it's not something you want to see at Al Horford.
He's shooting 38.7% over the last nine, and he's still unhurling 33% from three, but the key to his season early on, when you might have called him the MVP of this team, as I would have, he was shooting upwards of 40 and above, and that was driving his success. Spot-up shooting was a key part of what he was doing. Great point by you in that different guards have been shuffled in and out now, so you have a little bit of a different action at the top of the paint, whereas him and Kyrie were running a nice two-man game to start this year, and now Rozier just goes out there and kind of does his own thing, and Horford's left to do his own thing.
And with Smart being hurt as well. I mean, but there's been nights, too, where Larkin won't even play.
Yeah.
And then tonight he's in fourth quarter major minutes.
I will say, good job bringing up Larkin because he deserves success. I know he's given me crap in the past for not acknowledging his second half performance. He was very good out there in the second half. And as a guy who can control the pace, control the ball a little bit, him and Horford did get a little bit of a, you know, nice cohesion going there late in the third quarter, I want to say, into the fourth quarter.
Yeah. I just think it's hard because of how many different combos. I mean, when the Celtics were at their best, it was when obviously Kyrie and Horford are playing significant minutes that are all they're constant and they're flowing together too. The pick and roll is working well. But I think that the Marcus Smart injury right after the Lakers game when he busted his hand open, to me, there's definitely been a difference in the Celtics and what you've seen from the amount of just different combinations. It feels like every night they have somebody else out there who really feels the need to step up. And luckily, Marcus Morris, who people complained about when he was traded for Avery Bradley because of the salary dump that was really needed to get Gordon Hayward. But Marcus Morris has stepped up clearly tonight with the huge shot that we still haven't really even mentioned besides in the intro. But the thing to me is that there's so many different guys, and for Horford to have to deal with it in really not have consistent play from a guard, because last year he had so much consistent play from Isaiah, I think it's hard because there's been different ways. Smart went down, Kyrie's been banged up, and then you have Rozier come in and have those really good games, but it kind of takes away from what Horford's doing. So Horford's had really clutch moments this year that you can look back on, but there's also been times where, like, especially in these last 9-10 games, where you're like, where is Al Horford?
Morris has been a baller for this team, and I don't think he's gotten nearly enough credit. He gets a lot of crap for the shots he takes. He gets a lot of crap for how he approaches the game, so aggressive, so reckless at times. But we've complained about guys in the past for being passive, whether it's Horford or Linick. And it's not often that we've seen a guy in that 3-4 role coming off the bench for the Celtics to be able to come in and give them 20 points, just kind of showing up, being efficient in doing it sometimes, putting up a high volume of shots. he's been a revelation for this team, really. And it hasn't been on the defensive end as some people hoped, I think, it would have been. And we just, you had talk of him being a LeBron stopper before the year, which probably was a myth concocted by Celtics Twitter. But the guy can ball. He will put up shots in the paint, on the wing, doesn't matter where it is. And I wouldn't have rather had it in anyone else's hands in that final moment than him, because even with everything going on around him, all the traffic, all the movement he had to do in that final second, the final 2 seconds of the game, he knew he had enough time to adjust himself, set himself, and he just let it fly.
Shout out to Jason Tatum, though, honestly, and the fact that he's the young guy. He probably feels the need to prove to everybody he can take that tough shot late, especially the fact that he just missed that huge free throw against the Wizards with a second left in the first overtime of that game just a few days ago. So Tatum maybe wanted to redeem himself, but instead making almost a veteran-type play, driving into the middle of the lane and finding an open Morris, and Morris with just almost like a looked like he was at the park, you know, like a shot with his buddies at a park or something so just kind of casual, the way he just kind of put his foot up and let that thing fly. But the shot was great by Morris, but you can't deny the fact that Tatum is so young, is so young, but he's making veteran plays like that. At the end of a game, Bob, when you are so efficient and you have 23 points and you hit Marcus Morris like that, I was so impressed by Tatum's court awareness there.
Tatum now has the 6th most points of any Celtics rookie in history through their first 70 games. He has been durable. He has shown up to every single game and started. Tonight he started at shooting guard, which we know isn't really a thing in the Celtics system, but he's facing different defenses there. Tonight he had Corey Brewer on him, and he turned the corner twice and slammed like his life depended on it through the rim. He was so aggressive tonight. In one play, he turned around corner, drove right through everybody, and slammed it down with one hand, and you heard a little Paul Pierce yell from him. Tatum hasn't really hit a point where he's been aggressive enough to let out those yells, maybe try to draw some fouls in the lane doing that thing. There's those little vocal inflections guys will throw in as they start to score deeper into their careers. That's something a lot of players talk about. Guys come in, they don't really do that. Now we're seeing Tatum do it for the first time, aggressive, on the wings, in between. If he's going to be a leading scorer on this team going forward, he's going to have to unleash that in-between game he's so comfortable with. And he did tonight while still getting to the rim a ton, still spotting up, shooting from three very efficiently. 3 of 6. Him and Morris were 6 of 12 in the game. I had reservations about those two being able to play together and coexist on the court, but over the last few weeks where they've had to do that, they have done a good job. Just, you know, playing separate sides of the court, they have similar styles, they're going to occupy different ends of the floor, but great awareness, great cohesion between them now. Morris was giving him a shout-out in the post-game interview as the 20-year-old he is now. Tatum was the story tonight. Morris hit the game winner, but Tatum was unreal. 23-11, 4 assists, limiting turnovers as the number one guy, a plus 23. He's so ready for this. This is what we looked at him doing Duke. This is what we looked at him doing going into the draft. Being a front man, being able to lead his team through these moments. Feels so good to have this guy here. Also feels good to have Nick Cicento, who I'm going to ask right now. What's going on with Al Horford, Nick? We need your theory on it.
I think, number one, and I mean, I've been somewhat of, you know, kind of lukewarm on Al Horford. I definitely like what he brings, you know, defensively. He's clearly, you know, the defensive option, the paint protection on this team. I don't think there's anybody else to rely on to guard people coming into the paint. I mean, there's other players that'll make those plays, but defensively he does that. I think offensively he's critical, even when Kyrie Irving or Marcus Smart are in the game, because he'll frequently lead the team. And I'm not even sure if this season he's leading the team overall in assists per game, but tonight, I mean, scoring-wise, terrible. Lots of turnovers, 4 turnovers, but 7 assists, you know, 6 rebounds. You often see the guy literally dribbling the ball, you know, grabbing a rebound and dribbling the ball up the court. Having, you know, a big man that can do that, that can rebound and then literally lead the offense, guide the offense, you know, from that position while dribbling the ball up the court and then finding the right person to pass to, the open man, that's something that's critical. But on the other end, his offense, I mean, you just absolutely need him to score more points. And I think what's happening is, more so than it's the, you know, rotation of different guards that he's playing with, I think more so than that is, you know, with Kyrie Irving there, with Marcus Smart there, there's a functional pick-and-roll, pick-and-pop game that they can go to when they want to, and he can execute with that. I don't think there's a guy really that's, you know, that has that chemistry with him that, you know, they can play that pick-and-roll, pick-and-pop game with him, or that, you know, dribble handoff game, the type of game that he normally plays. And he wasn't really the most effective scorer before this. So, you know, at this point, you know, now it's kind of he's being reduced to Al Horford, who has to basically many times create his own offense. And that's just what Al Horford looks like when you leave Al Horford to his own devices. And pivoting away from Al Horford, not to, you know, to hog this, CLNS Radio, or CLNS Media, I should say, but back in the day, I think it was in December 2016, back when CLNS Media was still CLNS Radio, someone from the site, one of their writers, wrote something about, should Danny Ainge take another look at Greg Monroe? And this is at a point when the Milwaukee Bucks had Greg Monroe. They had just signed Greg Monroe to a $17 million max contract, I think a year and a half before, and they were already looking to move
up Monroe. I will give that to you.
Well, yes, sir. And they were looking only for expiring contracts and maybe a draft pick. And I said, get Greg Monroe. Danny Ainge looked at Greg Monroe, and as soon as that rookie contract expired in Detroit, he was scheduled for a workout with Boston and other teams as well. But he just went to Milwaukee. They offered him the max at the time, which was 17, and he just took it and never gave anybody a chance. But I tell you what, Greg Monroe is the key to this team. I mean, they're going to make the second. They're going to have the second seed no matter what happens. But he's the key to this team, keeping this team afloat. And
you know, I agree, Nick. But here's the thing: keeping him on the floor defensively is going to be tough in the playoffs. Do you think there's any way they can circumvent some of the issues he has there? Because you know it's going to be pick and roll city in the playoffs, and with the tight rotations and everything, that's still my concern with him. I mean, he's trying so hard out there. You see, he's really giving it his all. But the slow feet just kills him, even when he's going as hard as he can on that end.
Yeah, it does, and I agree with you completely. But I think that when you get, you know, there's something about having, you know, when it comes to the playoffs, the game still, I mean, even in today's wide-open NBA, the game still slows down in the playoffs. And I think having the ability to be able to control that tempo, have the option to control the tempo, to go either fast with the naturally small lineup that the Boston Celtics have when they put their best players on the court, you know, that's just the way that they are. But also the ability to slow it down. Greg Monroe, and this is not going out on a limb. I've liked Greg Monroe for a long time. I've been a, you know, a Georgetown dude. I've been fascinated with Georgetown centers for my entire life. Dikembe Mutombo, Alonzo Mourning are some of my favorite players because they're defensive-oriented. Greg Monroe is not. But he has some of the best footwork in the NBA. He has elite-level footwork. Think of another big man. I know it's because that position is very limited in today's NBA. But watch some of his highlights in the post in his game. He has incredible footwork. He has always been able to finish with both hands. I heard you mention that earlier.
Yeah, that was
impressive.
And
he's very underrated at passing. So if you can disguise some of his, you know, his defensive weaknesses, Boris Dirk said something on the previous nationally televised game where she said, you know, Greg Monroe is giving you a good first effort, and that's, you know, that's all you can really ask for. And he does give a good first effort. He stays on people's hip a lot of the times. He'll contest shots. It doesn't always work, but he gives a good first effort. And I know there aren't a lot of other centers that like to bear players that like to back down under the basket, but he is fantastic at denying entry passes in the post, and he's fantastic at poking balls away in the post as well. So when you factor that in, when teams want to go big, teams that can go big, if they want to go big and slow the game down, Greg Monroe is not necessarily a defensive liability when other teams go big. It's only when he's caught on mismatches and players that are faster than him. So
I think you might be able
to disguise him.
I think there's first-round matchups, too, that would favor him really well there. If they saw Miami with Whiteside playing big minutes, that would probably bode well for him. You know, Milwaukee might be a different story. If they put Giannis at that center position, that might be tricky for him. But he's going to be a useful tool. And the fact that they brought him in here, he was deep down the roster when he first got here. Now he might even end up being starting by playoff time. It just shows you it never hurts to have that next man up. It never hurts. Bino, I'll ask you. We all know what he brings to the table. We've thrown it out there on the table so far. What can the Celtics do, lineup-wise, scheme-wise, to hide this guy's defense? They hit Isaiah Thomas defensively, so we know they can hide the worst of them. But sorry to throw that IT shade. That was not typical of me. But
I know. I was going to say, usually
how
IT,
can they hide Monroe?
IT's Homer. He's going to eventually have you as one of the kids. He's going to adopt you. But no, I genuinely think that with Greg Monroe, Bobby, it's one of those things that if he can just come in and play in Horford's spot, but in certain – are you talking playoff time?
Yeah.
I feel like in playoff time, if you can have him come in and almost give a spark but go through him offensively and on defense, maybe
– you know, how would it line up with him and Horford look? Because that's
do you think – well, that's my thing is I don't know if they would play them together in the playoffs because that's just too – they're too slow in a way. Especially if they're facing a first-round matchup with the Bucks. I mean, think about the athletic freaks that the Bucks have besides Giannis. They have Thon Maker and Jabari Parker, as well as Eric Bledsoe, who's an extremely athletic point guard. It's not like the Heat, who are kind of slow. Like, if you face a Heat team, I think you could throw that lineup out there because you have Whiteside and the Heat guards are a lot slower. But if you face an athletic Bucks team, or even if Philly falls all the way down to seven, which because the Celtics are probably going to play whoever's the seventh seed,
yeah,
they're going to be the second.
7-point race right now.
Right? So, I mean, I think with Philly, like maybe if Embiid and Saric are in there at the same time, yeah, you could play them. But I think it might depend more on matchups. I don't know how well you could hide two guys that are above 6'10", 6'11", and one of them plays really good D and one of them plays really good offense.
Well, they're going to play small quite a bit. I'm thinking just at the start of these giant games, matchup-wise. Tonight, great job by Stevens getting Monroe in there as Melo was starting to go to town on Baines quite a bit defensively. Rough night for Baines on the offensive end, as he'll have. But Monroe got in there and created his own shot in the lane on Melo, and they went back and forth for about six straight possessions. Melo looked very good creating offensively for his team out of the low post and got Corey Brewer three that really should have sealed this game until all that magic happened, as it does at the Garden quite a bit. 8-6-2 is with us. Let's hear his thoughts from tonight, whoever this is. Who we got here on the line?
What's going on, fellas? It's
Isaiah! Welcome.
What's going on, Bobby? How's everything, brother?
We're enjoying life out here in the cold, but luckily we're inside, so we're shielded.
Isaiah, every game Horford's offense gets worse and worse, and every game in the back of my head I'm like, wow, my boy Isaiah is so right, and he's going to come on and ream me. So ream me, Isaiah. I've been wrong for the past 9-10 games about Horford. You're right.
Hey, tell me about it. It's neither a right or a wrong thing. It's just the Celtics fans were all suffering through it. Hey, Bobby, you touched on it, and I've been standing on this pulpit trying to tell guys, we're paying this guy $27 million, and he's deteriorating right before our eyes. He can't even get his own shot now, much less draw a double team. I mean, if you notice, he's even floating around the perimeter now. I mean, you can swing this any way you want to try to make him look good. But one thing I think is that he's not above criticism like anyone else on the team, and he deserves it. He's been playing horribly. Whether he's hurt, whether he's old, whether he's lost his touch, whatever it is, Greg Monroe actually gives us something that Al doesn't and allows Al to play in more of the role that he wants to play, which is scary because we're going to be paying him, I think, $30 million next year.
Mm-hmm. There's actually 2 years left on the deal, 19 and then a player option in 2020 for $30 million, which is what you're mentioning. So that is a little bit of a scary thought.
Yeah,
luckily, it still is a short-term struggle stretch he's been on. It's less than 10 games. You know, it feels longer than it is, I think. But I was asking Nick, what do you think is the biggest issue? We're seeing turnovers emerge, and that's not typically something that he has. Like, I thought he was turnover-proof last year, and now that's kind of seeped into his game. It's just very perplexing because normally this guy just limits the amount of bad plays he makes throughout a game, and now we're seeing those creep in.
I kind of disagree with you, Bobby, because earlier in the year I called in and I talked about Al and when he was handling the ball, especially on those fast breaks. You're right. Last year he was foolproof with the ball, but this year he turns it over on the breaks. He turns it over in passes. He's getting five assists, but especially lately it's been highlighted. He's just clumsy with the ball. Some of his passes are just lazy. I mean, I don't know what's going on with Al, but it's just getting worse and worse as we look. And I don't think he's going to be on the team next year, to be honest with you. I think that's a contract. Just like Danny tried to fix the problems in order to move forward, I think Al is one of those problems that although we needed him to come in and we needed him at the time, this is a business, as the IT deal shows you. And I think Al's name is worth more than his game right now. And if that's the case, it's going to be worth more towards the Celtics moving forward to move that contract and get something else for him, especially when you're looking at somebody like Anthony Davis going into, what, his second to last year, something like that, or his last
no,
year.
No, he's actually signed through 21, so he's got 3 years left.
He's got 3 years left, wow. Yeah, so if that becomes available, I think that Al's a centerpiece in a deal like that. But moving forward, especially in the future, not to just mention the playoffs, I don't know how Celtic fans can stomach this kind of play. I mean, to be honest with you, that money could be allocated someplace else. And I know some people say when Gordon Hayward comes back, I think you said that yourself, that when Gordon Hayward comes back, Al's going to slide back to his third stud position, and he'll be a little bit more palatable in that role. But to be honest with you, I just think that for that money that we're paying Al, and with some of the things that's out there for the Celtics to do, I just think that he might not be on the team next year.
Well, Isaiah, staying in the present, because we can kind of talk hypotheticals and the Davis trade, which everybody loves to fantasize about. Staying in the present, though, I think you make a good point about the fact that Horford kind of looks, especially in the last 10 games, looser with the ball, and he doesn't – it feels like he's not being as smart. And it's confusing, too, because this year's team has a lot more pieces around him compared to last year. I mean, I really feel like if Horford didn't show up in a game, there was a very, very small percentage that the Celtics were going to win. Now, Celtics have so many guys, especially guys off the bench, sixth, seventh, eighth guy off the bench, are so good on the Celtics team that Horford can have an off night and it totally gets covered up, which in a lot of cases,
exactly.
even in a game like tonight, Isaiah, when the Celtics pull it out and they win, and you have guys off the bench like Morris, or actually Morris started tonight, but you have guys still like Monroe playing well, it still kind of covers up what Horford's doing. So I have to agree with you in that regard, and that that Horford definitely on a team that is much better, it is confusing that he's kind of taking a step back with his sloppy turnovers.
I will throw this back at you, Isaiah, though, because through his offensive struggles the last week or two and all the talk about his points and everything, he's maintained sensational defense, and I think that continued into tonight.
Yes.
You look at the defensive box plus-minus leaders in the NBA, a favorite stat of mine, because Tim Duncan used to always be right up at the top of that. You know Tim Duncan was the master of defense. He's still seventh in the NBA in defensive box plus-minus, right above Draymond Green, who will probably win Defensive Player of the Year. So Horford's going to be right in that conversation, and I think that's still key to how this team wins games, even tonight.
Definitely. I think that's where Al is. That's why, as much as I talk about Al, there's only like two other guys in the league that I would much rather have than Al, because I think you guys were talking earlier about Greg Monroe and where he fits moving forward. I totally disagree with you guys. I think Greg, and agree with Nick actually, that Greg Monroe was the key to the Celtics' success in the playoffs, because Baines is giving you – he's another one that's – I don't think Baines is deteriorating. I think Baines is finding his level. I think he was playing over his head earlier in the season, and I think this is exactly who the Celtics were getting when they didn't think they were getting a starting center when they signed Baines. They thought they were getting a big guy who would be in the rotation, and I think this is where Baines is coming back to earth. And he's hitting like a meteor. So with that being said, Greg Monroe was totally necessary on this team, not just because of what he's doing now. I think Greg Monroe is a starting center in this league. The only thing that's keeping him on the bench or making him making teams look the other way with him is the fact that his defense, he is somewhat of a defensive liability, because like you said, Bobby, he's been putting forth the effort, and with this Stevens team, everyone puts forth the effort. So I think the perimeter, once we have everyone back, those guys play hard. And as long as they're not turnstiles on the outside, Greg Monroe knows where he's supposed to be, and he's going to try like heck to get there. But even if he gives up points on the defensive end, I think he's a necessary I don't even want to say evil. He's just necessary because of how you can he can ground an offense. If you remember last year, I wanted Carmelo Anthony for that same reason, that when the Celtics get three-point happy, you want someone that you can just throw the ball down to, let the game slow down, and run the offense through the post.
You know, there was a lot of Melo the Celtics talk even just a year ago. I think they found like the better. I think they found the better in Marcus Morris. Like he's really playing like a Melo style in this team, and he's doing it better than Melo.
Cheaper.
Hey, you know why I disagree with you on that one? Because you're right. Morris is playing better. I remember early in the year I criticized his role on the team, and I think he's found it. It took him a while to find his role in the team, but Melo is a next-level player. I mean, his basketball IQ was way above Marcus Morris's.
You did see that way in this game.
Yeah, his basketball IQ.
Those free throws at the end, Isaiah.
Yeah, but you know what? Nobody's perfect out there. There's only even LeBron misses shots. You know, so I would much rather still have Anthony for what Nick said earlier. The playoffs is another animal. So when you have that guy who can score out of the post like Jason Tatum is starting to be, and like Greg Monroe can be, and the guy that Al Horford doesn't want to be, once you have that guy there in Monroe, you saw what he could do. And that leads me to my next point and probably my last. What a game coached by Stevens tonight. Oh my gosh, that guy was awesome tonight, man. I was sitting there yelling at the screen because he tried to get away with Larkin running the team because, as you heard me say before, Terry Rozier is not a point guard. He's a scorer. So, and when he there's so many times, and you're right about something also. Al playing with all these different players, it affects his game because he feeds off of other guys. So when Rozier misses that pick and roll all the time, when Rozier continuously misses Al on the pick and roll, which Marcus almost never does, or which Kyrie almost never does, and Al can't get those points right there, that sets the offense back, and it's almost like restarting the offense again. So he tries to keep Larkin in because Larkin can put – I mean, Rozier has trouble passing the ball in the post. So Larkin knows how to feed the post. He knows how to run the offense. And so he tried to get away with those two guys. But by having Larkin on the court, you couldn't have Greg Monroe on the court, and they were getting killed. Two possessions in a row, they got killed on that. So what did Brad do? He took a timeout at, I think, the 2:42 mark, put Greg Monroe in. Monroe instantly played dividends, and it came up with 4 points down the stretch. He instantly changed the game, made it tougher, took advantage of Carmelo in the post, and kept the Celtics afloat so that they can make that final push. Great job by Brad. Great coaching job. Great at admitting he made a mistake. Because I'm yelling at the TV, Brad, what are you doing? And he instantly calls that timeout and corrects his mistake. What a coaching job.
He heard Isaiah right through the TV, and you nailed it there. That was the game. Those three buckets in a row on Melo, I believe it was. Those were crucial plays in this one. Every single bucket you get down the stretch in the final 24 seconds is vital. You need as many as you can, so then right when the opponent slips up, you're in position to make the final play. You know, I thought there was one play down the stretch where Rozier heaved a three that didn't look great with 35 seconds left, but then he comes back, they take the two with 17, Rozier takes the three with 12, so you go two, then three. That gets you within two, and then or within one, rather. And then Melo misses the free throw. All of a sudden, a three wins it instead of ties it, and Morris does the job. So brilliant handling of the last 24 seconds tonight, and that's good coaching. Great coaching, I would even say. So Isaiah in New Jersey, another great call.
Yeah, and Bob, this is the thing, too. I am always impressed on how the Celtics have guys that could be heroes or try to play, make the hero play, especially Tatum tonight. He's butting into that guy who at the end of a game you want to have make a big play. He just made one against the Wizards, like I said, in that one overtime, in the first overtime, and gets an and-one that almost looks like they could have won the game. Complete opposite thing for the Thunder. You see Russell Westbrook, who is one of my favorite players to watch in the league, but you have to scratch your head when he throws up a bomb from 5 feet to beyond the three-point line for no reason with, I want to say, about 40 seconds to go. That was kind of a forced shot that they really didn't need. They could have had something more efficient going to the basket when they had a lead. I just am so glad that Brad Stevens, with every single player, make sure every single player takes the most efficient shot, especially towards the end of games. I mean, having a coach like that to get that out of players, and you see on the other side when you have guys like Westbrook, who I think is a great player, but doesn't always make the best decisions down the stretch. That, to me, was so crucial, and it was so telling. That's the difference between a Billy Donovan, who's a B-plus coach, and a Brad Stevens, who's really, in my opinion, an A coach.
Before we go off the air here, I was going to get us off the air at 11:30, but we're going to talk to Mike Petrelia, who is calling in from the Garden in a moment's notice. So we're going to ask him a handful of questions before we leave. As for the Thunder, it looks like they're climbing up in the West. You know, they're figuring things out. Paul George was sensational tonight, just nailing three after three, spotting up on the perimeter. Melo got involved late after he looked really bad in the opening minutes. Bricked a crazy shot early on and missed his first three. Westbrook started slow, had a hot stretch, finished slow. There's still a little bit of a lack of cohesion between those three when it comes to just synergy. You know, being able to all do things that contribute to a greater cause instead of just doing the individual things that pile up and sometimes get you wins, but only work out to about a 43-30 record to this point. Do you think that team has any hope of competing out in the West?
I mean, competing, of course. You have three guys that are that good. Of course, you're going to compete, but are they going to win multiple series, and especially in the second round against a potential Rockets or Warriors? No, they're not. They're just the fact that they're 73 games in, and that's what it looks like at the very end of a game when you have Westbrook taking a forced three when Melo was really the one on fire. Even Paul George had hit a three with about a minute or so to go. I mean, it just shows that they're so awkward and there's no communication about who should be the guy down the stretch.
And no bench even. Like, they were lucky to get bench points at any circumstance in this game, and they're fully healthy. Celtics are going down to the G League rosters, they were saying on the simulcast, and they're getting very quality minutes out of their bench guys. 17-13 from Larkin. That three he hit at halftime was sick. Larkin's just handing it to me at every turn. And then Nader gets you a three.
I hope Larkin calls in one day.
Yeah, I wouldn't count on that. We're going to hear from Trags here, I hope, as long as we don't hit 11:30. We might as well talk about the injuries at this point, because there's a lot of guys sitting on the bench tonight watching from the sidelines. And we're going to get Smart back if they make a deep playoff run. That seems imminent. They're going to get Brown back during this road trip. Irving, as I said in the opener, is going to miss this road trip, as Brad Stevens said today. So the earliest we'll see Kyrie Irving back on the court for the Celtics is March 31st, and it feels like it's going to be longer than that. So we're going to discuss him. Have you read the news on him today? Are you worried about what you're reading?
So 98.5 Sports Hub, Tony Maserati, said that Kyrie's going to get a second opinion, and if he gets surgery, then he's going to be completely out for the rest of the year. So I don't know what to make of that necessarily, because Maz, to me, is such a great personality, but knows little to none about the Celtics. So hopefully his source is extremely credible with that. But look, I think that Kyrie's definitely going to need surgery eventually, but Kyrie's the type of guy that he's a gamer. He's going to want to play in the playoffs, of course, and I think he feels that this team could potentially make it all the way to an NBA Finals. So I think unless Kyrie really has a messed up knee, he's not telling it, and the team and Coach Brad Stevens are just not telling people, I think, okay, yeah, maybe it's worse than we think. But right now, I expect Kyrie back, but maybe it's just closer to playoff time.
Right now, it's a mini crisis right now, because I think there's uncertainty floating around the team. The fact that they're looking for a second opinion, the fact that they want to change course on what they're doing, and it doesn't look like we're going to get dragged in here. But we'll close it out with the fact that I think this second opinion that he's getting on this knee is really going to be crucial, not only for this year, but years to come. When they get a definitive answer on what his knee is going to need going forward, or at least close to definitive, It's very crucial. They traded for Irving knowing that he's had injury concerns in the past. And when you commit to a guy like that who has been in the league for a few years now, has gone through some wear and tear, who really just puts a lot of pressure on his body the way he plays, so aggressive, so hard dribbling, going in the bodies in the paint. I don't think that's what contributed to this, but he's definitely a high usage player on the ball. It's concerning.
He's only 25, though. So, I mean, yeah, I understand he's been to three straight finals and he's had a lot of mileage already, but you also have to remember that before LeBron got there, he played only 82 games every year, if that, because those teams stuck.
No, they were going to the finals, though, with LeBron every single year.
No, Bob, I'm saying before LeBron got there. I'm saying with Kyrie's original first few years of those Cavs teams, it's not like he played more than 82 games. So that's my thing. So, I mean, I think that obviously there's wear and tear from these past 3 years of when LeBron did return to Cleveland and they made those three straight finals. But I think that it's something to be said that Kyrie's still young. It's not like Kyrie's 28. Oh, boy, 28-year-old, knee problems. No, he's 25. Let's see. Let's get the second opinion. Everybody needs to relax. Celtics Twitter, don't go crazy.
The Duke injury was a foot injury, so we don't have to worry about that one going way back. But the guy does have an injury history. The broken knee in the finals in 2015 has lingered until now. And the fallout all came that he was going to go into surgery, a surgery he's needed since then, to miss the year with the Cavaliers if they didn't trade him. Use that as a leverage point, allegedly. And now that's out there. This doesn't seem to be related. We're talking about screws in the knee at this point. We need better answers. So we're going to look for those. Hopefully we'll hear more definitive answers on Kyrie Irving going forward. For now, the Celtics are in good hands. Jason Tatum, Marcus Morris, Jaylen Brown will return on this road trip, as Steven said today. And with that, the Celtics are headed out west as the NCAA tournament hits the garden floor. So they are going out west to play the Trailblazers, Kings, Suns, and Jazz on ESPN. That is a good one. Ooh, what day is that? March 28th. I'm going to be tuning into that one. Jazz are on fire right now. You got Jay Crowder out there contributing. That is my cup of tea. I'm a big, big fan of their center there, too. Gobert. That's it. So that's that. I'm Bobby Manning. Andrew Rubino to my left. Live in the studio out here in Syracuse. Go Syracuse over Duke on Friday, of course. Kyrie, Jason, I have to turn away from you on this one. And Sam Sheehan accused me of switching out a Celtics win at this point. I will trade the Portland game for a Syracuse win, sadly.
Sacrifice.
Yes. So we'll be watching that. Someone else will be on the air Friday. Not sure who that is. But for Bobby Manning, myself, Andrew Rubino, Nick Sacento, and Isaiah New Jersey, who called in tonight. Great calls by those two. We will see you on Friday. Friday. Good night.
This has been the Celtics postgame show on CLNSradio.com. Thanks for listening. The Celtics might not be in action every day, but we are, so stay connected. Follow us on Twitter at CLNSRadio and check out our broadcast schedule for the best weekly sports podcasts on the web.